Turn, if you would, to Daniel chapter 7. While you're turning there, if you're watching this from home, we got a lot of slides that we're going to show today, and it might be easier if you have those. If you want to go to find those, you'll probably have to go to the sermonaudio.com. You have to search it on the internet, sermonaudio.com, and look for the Brethren Reformed Church, and you'll be able to pull up those slides. Later on, it's going to be on the Facebook page, the Brethren Reformed Church Facebook page, but it might just be easier to follow along. So, turn to Daniel chapter 7. We've got a lot that I want to try to get through today, so I think we're just going to dive right into it. If I can ever find the chapter, I'm almost there. I brought some glasses so I can see what I'm reading today. All right, Daniel chapter 7. We're going to read this whole thing. As we read this, I want you to try to picture this in your mind. So this is lots of visual stuff in this chapter. So try to think about what this might look like as you read through it. I'm going to read through part of it. I'll stop every once in a while and make some comments. But if you can, try to visualize what's going on in your head as we're reading this, and kind of try to take it in as we read it. And so Daniel chapter 7, let's start in verse 1. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel saw a dream and visions of his head as he lay in his bed. Then he wrote down the dream and he told the sum of the matter. So here we have Daniel, falls asleep, and he has these visions. So everything we're going to see here is what he's dreaming about, his visions. Verse 2. Daniel declared, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. And four great beasts came up out of the sea, different from one another. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. Then as I looked, its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. And the mind of a man was given to it. And behold, another beast, a second one, like a bear. It was raised up on one side, it had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth, and it was told to arise and devour much flesh. After this I looked, and behold, another, like a leopard, with four wings of a bird on its back, and the beast had four heads, and dominion was given to it. After this I saw in the night visions, behold, a fourth beast, terrifying and dreadful and exceedingly strong. It had great iron teeth. It devoured and broke in pieces and stamped what was left with its feet. It was different from all the other beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another horn, a little one, before which three of the first horns were plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. So we've seen these four beasts come up out of the great sea. The fourth beast is different from the other three beasts. At the end of verse 7, it says, it was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. Verse 8 says, I considered the horns. So as you're looking at that last beast that has 10 horns on its head, behold, there came up from among them another horn, a little one, before which three of the first horns were plucked up by the roots. So this little horn uproots these three of the 10 horns. It says, and behold, in this horn were eyes like eyes of a man and a mouth speaking great things. We recognize this little horn as the Antichrist. Verse 9. As I looked, thrones were placed. So the scene changes here. As I looked, the thrones were placed, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His clothing was white as snow. The hair of his head was like pure wool. Try to imagine that. His throne was fiery flames. Its wheels were burning fire. A stream of fire issued and came out from before him. 1,000 thousands served him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court sat in judgment, and the books were opened. I looked then because of the sound of the great words that the horn was speaking. And as I looked, the beast was killed and its body destroyed and given over to be burned with fire. As for the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away, but their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. I saw in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven there came one like the Son of Man, and he came to the Ancient of Days. And he was presented before him, and to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and this kingdom one that shall not be destroyed. As for me, Daniel, my spirit within me was anxious, and the visions of my head alarmed me. I approached one of those who stood there and asked him the truth concerning all of this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of the things. That's the end of the vision. So Daniel sees this vision. Now we're going to see what the interpretation of that vision is. In verse 17, it says, "These four great beasts are four kings who shall arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, forever and ever." So if I had to put a summary of this entire chapter, chapter 7, it would be these two verses. It's kind of quick and it's kind of easy. If you want to know what this chapter is about, verse 17 says, "The four great beasts are four kings," or kingdoms. They're interchangeable here. "Four nations. These four great beasts are four kings who arise out of the earth, but in the end, the saints of the Most High are going to receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, forever, and ever." It's all good. Verse 19. "Then I desired to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the rest. It was exceedingly terrifying with its teeth of iron and claws of bronze, which devoured and broke in pieces and stamped that which was left with its feet. And about the 10 horns that were on its head, and the other horn that came up, which before three of them fell, the horn that had eyes, a mouth that was speaking great things, and seemed greater than its companions. As I looked, this horn," remember that we said that's the Antichrist, "as I looked, this horn made war with the saints and prevailed over them." So the Antichrist here is making war with saints that live on the earth, and he is killing them. He's prevailing over them. So what part of history are we talking about here? We're talking about the end, right? This is the Antichrist. He's killing Christians. Martyrs are being happening here. And so when you think of this, I'm hoping maybe you think a couple years back when I covered the end times in Matthew 24. Do you remember that big timeline of Daniel's 70th week that we put on there, and we started filling in all the little details of the 70th week of Daniel, that last 7 years? That's where we're talking about. Verse 22. So he was prevailing against the saints until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was given for the saints of the Most High, and a time came when the saints possessed the kingdom. So in the end, the Ancient of Days is going to come, judgment will happen, and the saints are going to have a kingdom. Verse 23. "Thus he said, as for the fourth beast, there shall be a fourth kingdom on earth, which shall be different from all the kingdoms, and it shall devour the whole earth, and trample it down, and break it to pieces. As for the 10 horns, out of this kingdom 10 kings shall arise, and another shall arise after them. He shall be different from the former ones, and shall put down 3 kings. He shall speak words against the Most High, and he shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and shall think to change the times and the law, and they shall be given into his hand." That is saying the Antichrist shall wear out the saints of the Most High. And it's saying that the saints will be given into the Antichrist's hand for a time, times, and half a time. Verse 26. "But the court shall sit in judgment, and his dominion shall be taken away, to be consumed and destroyed to the end. And the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High. Their kingdom shall be an everlasting kingdom, and all dominion shall serve and obey them. Here is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts greatly alarmed me, and my color changed, but I kept the matter in my heart." That's Daniel chapter 7. So just, there's a lot to take in there. So I tried to find you guys a good picture here. I looked through a lot of pictures to try to find a good one. This one's okay. And it might be a little hard to see the little detail there, but just these four beasts, let's just recap those just real quick. So in the first 7 verses, we find these four beasts that come out of the sea. And the little words there, which are really hard to see, just kind of give you just a quick summary of each one. And so that first one there is a lion with wings. Sometimes it's easier if you have a visual of what's going on. So the visual is a lion, and it has eagle's wings on it. The wings are later plucked from it, It's lifted up from the earth and it's given a man's heart. The second beast looks, which is a kingdom, looks like a bear, which has three ribs in its teeth, and it was told to devour much flesh. The third beast is a leopard, looks like a leopard, and it has four heads and four wings of a bird. And it's given dominion. Now the last beast. Now, I'm not an artist. I look over at Reuben every time I look at that, think of that. I'm not an artist, so I don't know. If I was drawing something, I would probably be able to figure out what a lion looks like with, and then I can slap some eagle's wings on it. A bear, that's not too hard to draw. Now, it gets a little bit more, you know, more artistic license, if you will. If you have a leopard with four heads and four wings, you can kind of put those wings in different spots and the heads in different spots. Now, the fourth beast is different from all the other ones. There's nothing like it. There's no animal that comes up. So every time I find a picture of the fourth beast, it always looks different. So when you see my pictures, they're going to look different. For some reason, all the artists think that the fourth beast looks like a dinosaur. So we will have a couple different dinosaurs that are pictured here. But the main thing, this one looks like to me like a triceratops coming out of the ocean with 10 horns on its head. Basically, what you need to know about this fourth beast is it's just different than all the other beasts. It's something that can't be described by Daniel. It terrifies him. It's dreadful. It's terrible. It has iron teeth and brass nails, and it has 10 horns on its head. And out of those 10 horns, three horns are plucked up, and the little horn, the Antichrist, comes to power through that. Now, in verse 17, it says, these four beasts are four kings or kingdoms. Their nations, their countries, or more like kingdoms. These four great beasts are kings who shall arise out of the earth. So who are these kingdoms? So if you're looking on the world stage today, and you're trying to figure out who's the four kingdoms, and you try to think to yourself, man, you know, I think Russia's the bear, or I think this, or I think that. I'm not sure that we can get there yet. I'm not sure that these are on the world stage yet. They may be, but I'm not sure. We don't know, because I think this is all future stuff. Most people are going to teach you that Daniel 2 and Daniel 7 are the same thing. That's why I taught Daniel 2 last week, so we can see it. So most are going to say that Daniel 7 is a retelling of Daniel 2. So I got here a picture of Daniel 2. If you remember Daniel 2, it was Nebuchadnezzar. Remember, Nebuchadnezzar has a dream, and in that dream, He has a dream, and it really freaks him out. And he needs to know not only the interpretation of the dream, but he wants somebody that can tell him what the dream is. And so he goes to his wise men and says, I need to know the dream and the interpretation. And no one can do it, so he's just going to kill all the wise men. And so Daniel prays to God and says, you know, give me some insight here, God. And so God does that, and he says, I'm going to tell you the interpretation of the dream. So Daniel runs to Nebuchadnezzar and says, I know what your dream is, and I know the interpretation. And so that's what we covered last week. And he sees this picture of a statue. And the statue has four parts to it, and there's four kingdoms. They stand for four kingdoms. The interpretation of the dream, we were told that Nebuchadnezzar, you are the head of gold. So it goes from precious metal to less precious metal as it goes down. And basically what he says is you are the head of gold. Babylon and Nebuchadnezzar is the head of gold. And you're going to have three more nations come and conquer. And it's basically going to run the time span from the time of Daniel to the time of Christ. And so the history of the world from Daniel to Christ is these four nations. Babylon rules the world. Medo-Persia comes in. That's the chest of silver. Comes in and destroys Babylon. Greece, with Alexander the Great, comes in, and he's the waste with the bronze, and he takes over Medo-Persia. And Rome comes in at the end and destroys the Greeks. And so that's what happened in Daniel 2. So if you think that Daniel 7 and Daniel 2 are the same, you think, for some reason, we think that the statue is equal to these pictures of these different nations. So you would equate the lion with wings to Babylon. That's probably your best case if you're trying to figure that out, but it's pretty easily dismissed. I have no idea why somebody would think a bear represents Medo-Persia. There's really nothing to show that. And then you would think that the leopard with wings and four heads is Greece, A lot of people say that because when Alexander the Great died, he had four generals. It would be really weird to portray Greece as four generals because as soon as the generals took over, it went downhill quick. Alexander the Great was the one who did all the conquering, not his four generals. So that doesn't make any sense. And then for some reason, we have another dinosaur. We have a T-Rex stomping on an arch in Italy somewhere. And so that's supposed to represent Rome. And so that's how most people will teach you this. I'm not teaching you that. I don't think these things are things that were in the past. I think there's some problems with Daniel 2 and Daniel 7 being the same. I think the biggest problem is what I taught last week, is most of the misunderstanding comes from the stone in Daniel 2. And so I couldn't find a really good picture of this that would come in clear, but you can kind of see it there. So there's the statue that I just showed you a second ago. It's got the gold head of Nebuchadnezzar. It's got the silver, that's Medo-Persia, the bronze, which is Alexander the Great in Greece, and the iron mixed with clay is the Roman Empire. And most people misunderstand the stone. I was talking with somebody last week after the thing, and they said they heard Daniel 2 preached like 30 times, and no one's ever preached on the stone part of it. He's never heard that before. I think that's the most important of the whole thing. So you don't have to turn with me, but I'm going to turn back to Daniel chapter 2, and I just want to pull out a couple verses because I think it helps us understand what's going on. So Daniel 2, if you just flip back a couple pages there, in verse 31... the interpretation of the dream. It says, "You saw, O king, and behold, a great image. This image, mighty and of exceeding brightness, stood before you, and its appearance was frightening. The head of the image was gold, its chest and arms of silver, its middle and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. And as you looked, a stone was cut out by no human hand, and it struck the image on the feet of iron and clay, and broke them in pieces." So that's what this picture is depicting. The stone strikes the feet of the statue. And it says, the iron, the clay, the bronze, and broke them in pieces. In verse 35, it says, "Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold all together were broken in pieces and became like chaff in the summer threshing floors. And the wind carried them away so that not a trace of them could be found." So when this stone strikes the feet here, all of these kingdoms go away. Just like all kingdoms, since the beginning of time, doesn't matter how great they are, doesn't matter if they're gold or silver or whatever they are, doesn't matter if they're strong like iron, in the end, kingdom comes after kingdom, and they all go away. There's only one kingdom that matters in the end. In verse 35, the end of it, it says, "But the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth." Now, if you skip down to verse, 44, it says, "In the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that shall never be destroyed, nor shall the kingdom be left to another people. It shall break in pieces all kingdoms, and bring them to an end, and it shall stand forever. Just as you saw a stone was cut from a mountain by no human hand, and that broke in pieces the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold. A great God has made known to the king what shall be after this. The dream is certain, and his interpretation is sure." What Nebuchadnezzar, or what Daniel chapter 2 is trying to tell us, is this great stone crushes these four kingdoms, and those four kingdoms go away. So if you think Daniel 7 and Daniel 2 are the same thing, and you know Daniel 7 is talking about the Antichrist and future things, then if God sets up his kingdom with this stone, if you were alive at that time and you were a Jew, you would have thought when Jesus Christ comes, he must be setting up the kingdom. There's a problem with that because 2,000 years have gone by and the kingdom's not here. There's still other kingdoms. There's the United States, there's China, there's Russia, there's all these other kingdoms, and they're not destroyed. There's not one kingdom that stands forever and ever, and there's no other kingdoms around, so that we have a problem. So, if you're one of those people who think that Daniel 2 and Daniel 7 are the same, you've got to rationalize that somehow. Because it happened during the Roman Empire, so in the end, after these 2,000 years go by, there must be a revived Roman Empire. It must come back to life again, because I don't have any other way to explain it. But what I think they miss is the stone. The stone starts out as this little rock, and then it grows to a mountain, and then that mountain fills the whole earth. I think that's what's been happening for the last 2,000 years. The stone happened when Jesus Christ came to the earth. He established that kingdom. Now, that kingdom didn't come at that time. It wasn't fulfilled at that time, but it was secured at that time. So when Jesus comes, he brings this little stone that crushes all the kingdoms before it. He establishes the kingdom. Over this next couple thousand years, that stone is turning into a mountain, and eventually that mountain will fill the whole earth. Remember, the gospel has to go to the ends of the earth. That's what missionaries think all the time, is we've got to get this word to the ends of the earth. That's why I told you about the parable of the mustard seed. Remember, it says the kingdom of heaven is like what? A mustard seed. Starts out really little. And then eventually it grows to be the biggest tree in the garden, and it supports all kinds of life, like birds in the air, and provides shade for people under it. That's where I think most people get confused. And so if you can rationalize that in your head and you can go, oh, okay, I understand that, and you can separate Daniel 2 from Daniel 7, I think it makes it a lot easier. There's some other problems. I think that's the big one. Another problem is the timing of the kingdoms. For Daniel 2 and Daniel 7 to be the same thing, Daniel 2 is pretty clear. Babylon gets conquered by Medo-Persia, which gets conquered by Greece. So they come in chronological order, one after the other. You also have to see these seven kingdoms at the end happening in chronological order. So the bear must conquer the lion, and then the leopard must conquer the bear. All of that stuff takes a long time. So it must happen chronologically. And so just to give you a little look here, so what we're saying here is this kingdom must conquer this kingdom, and this kingdom has to conquer this kingdom, and this kingdom has to conquer this kingdom. But I don't think that's what the text is showing us at all in Daniel 7. It's not the same. They're not related at all. I believe that the Daniel 7 beast kingdoms are all four kingdoms. They all happen at the exact same time in the end. Why is this important? Well, do you want to know what the end looks like? Do you want to know how to tell what the end will look like? The 70th week of Daniel, when it comes along, how do you know what to look for? I think this gives us a clue. I think the Daniel 7 beast kingdoms are all on the earth at the same time instead of one after the other. I'm going to try to show you that. There's a few different ways I can show you that, but I think one easy way is verses 11 and 12. I looked then because of the sound of the great words that the horn was speaking. And as I looked, the beast was killed and its body destroyed and given over to be burned with fire. So the fourth beast is destroyed with fire. Then it says, as for the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away, but their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. So if we know this horn is the Antichrist, almost everyone believes that, whether you believe in Daniel 2 and Daniel 7 being the same, or if you believe something different, almost everyone agrees that the little horn is the Antichrist. So I'm not going to go into how we figured that out, but almost everyone agrees that the little horn is the Antichrist. So if that's true and we know this is the end times, what you're telling me, if these two kingdoms are the same, is that the beast gets destroyed with fire, but Babylonians are still hanging out on the earth. And Medo-Persians are still around at that time. Like, they have a big influence at the time. And I just don't see that. I don't know of any Babylonians in the world. I don't know if anybody's related to a Babylonian. I don't know very, very many people are related to Medo-Persians. Greece is a little bit more of a modern country, but it's not what it used to be. And so you have a problem if you think that these kingdoms are going to be around for a while, and in the end, the four kingdoms left are going to be Babylon and Medo-Persia and Greece, and they're the main players on the world stage. So what I believe is that this vision is a picture of what will be happening on the earth when the Antichrist begins his reign. All four of these kingdoms will come onto the world scene at the same time, and I think the Bible actually gives us a little glimpse of what the beginning, the middle, and the end of that reign looks like. I think Daniel 7 is the beginning part of it. And so we are going to pull this up. Okay, now when you guys look at this, you're like, oh no, what's he doing here? You remember when we went through this? We took 12 weeks to get through this and come up with this little slide. And you guys were just nodding your head along the whole time like you knew everything that was going on. You didn't ask me any questions about anything. And in the end, you guys knew everything on this and could tell me all about it. So I don't want to hear, I don't understand what you're talking about. Because you didn't ask me any questions. I think Gavin's the only one who asked me any questions on this whole time. So the point of showing you this is when we talked about the 70th week of Daniel, we knew a lot of biblical points for the abomination of desolation. The abomination of desolation is in the future. The Antichrist is going to come on the world scene. And in Daniel 9:27, it says, in the middle of the week, halfway, 3.5 years into the 7-year period, there's going to be, the Antichrist is going to go into the temple, and he's going to defile the temple and claim himself to be God. Says he's going to stop sacrifices and offerings. So at some point out here before this, sacrifices and offerings in Israel have to happen again. The Jews have to have a temple of some sort, whether it's a tabernacle, whether it's a tent like Moses had, or whether it's an actual structure. It could go up very quick, or it could take years to build. I don't know. But at some point, even out here, a temple could be built, but sacrifices and offerings have to start again in Israel. Jews have to go to the temple and sacrifice things like they did in the Old Testament. At some point, at the midpoint, Daniel 9:27 says the abomination of desolation is going to happen. The Antichrist is going to put an end to sacrifices and offerings, and he's going to proclaim himself to be God to the world. We have lots of points for that. Matthew 24:15 says the same thing. And so we have lots of points for what happens after this. We know the Great Tribulation happens here, and all these verses correspond to the Great Tribulation. All these things happen during the Great Tribulation. And we have lots of stuff that goes on from the rapture and everything else, and I showed you tons of slides with that, and we talked about it for weeks. What I told you at the time is we really don't have a lot of information on the first 3.5 years. It's not real solid. And so the only thing that I could give you is it seems like Matthew 24, 4 through 8, is the first 3.5 years, and that's really all we had. So Matthew 4, 24, 4 through 8 says this. And so in the first couple verses, the disciples are looking at Jesus and says, when will these things be? When will the sign of your coming be? And in verse 4 he says, and Jesus answered them, see that no one leads you astray, for many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ. False Christs will be prevalent, and they will lead many astray. And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars, so it will be a time of war, unlike no other. See that you are not alarmed, and this must take place. But the end is not yet, for nation is going to rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. We're talking a lot about kingdoms here. Kingdom is going to rise against kingdom, and there will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All of these are but the beginning of birth pangs. And so on our little chart here, the beginning of birth pangs, the first 3.5 years, all I really taught you was these 4 or 5 verses there. I believe that we can take Daniel 7 and slide it right in here at the first 3.5 years of this 7-year period. Remember, I don't call this the 7-year tribulation like most people because I think there's only one great tribulation. It happens after the abomination of desolation. This is just called the 70th week of Daniel from Daniel chapter 9. And so I believe Daniel chapter 7 fits right here. I believe Daniel 2 happened in the past, and we can go look at it in the past and match it up with history. So in Daniel 7, I think there is a dividing. I'm trying to give you the overview of all this before we actually dig into it, so maybe you'll be there before I get there. There is a dividing of the world into 4 parts before the Antichrist begins his rule. I think on earth, the world is divided into 4 parts. The Antichrist will take control of one of those kingdoms, signified by the fourth beast that has 10 horns and the little horn. Eventually, he will conquer all 4 kingdoms. He will control the entire earth at some point. It even tells us that in our interpretation, as we read after in the interpretation of the vision. I believe this matches up really well with the fourth seal. I believe his initial ruling will be over a quarter of the earth. The Antichrist will rule one of these kingdoms, which has a quarter of the earth. I think it lines up with the fourth seal. It says Revelation 6, 7 through 8. It says, when he opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth living creature say, come. And I looked, and behold, a pale horse. And its rider's name was Death, and Hades followed him. And they were given authority over a fourth of the earth to kill with sword, with famine, with pestilence, and with wild beasts of the earth. Now, you probably don't remember, but I actually taught this when we were talking about this a couple years ago. I highlighted wild beasts of the earth because I brought that up when we were talking about it. The term wild beasts in the Greek is used 39 times. If you take out this one time, the other 38 times, wild beast, that word there is always talking about the Antichrist or the beast. Every single time. This could be talking about wild beasts. It's possible that in the end, people are going to be killed with sword, famine, pestilence, and wild dogs. But it would be out of character. It would mean something different than all the other times it's used in Revelation. I believe this means being killed by the beast, the Antichrist. And that's why I think it matches up so well here. So, to tie some of this together, I believe Daniel 11:36-45, we're not going to turn there. This is for people who are interested in this stuff. Some of you may be looking at me like, I don't care about any of this. What are you talking about? This is all crazy. How did we get here? I thought we were talking about the gospel. What are we doing? I believe Daniel 7 is the beginning of the Antichrist's reign. I believe if you want to know more about what happened, how it happens, the details of it, I believe that's in Daniel 11. If you read verses 36 through 45, it describes some of the details of the wars that will take place. Because the Antichrist is a war machine. He starts out with a quarter of the earth, but in the end, he has the entire earth. He's going to conquer the other three beasts. And so, if you turn to Daniel, don't do that, but if you turn to Daniel 11, 36 through 45, and you think, man, I'm going to figure this out right now. It's tough. It's a rough road. It talks about the king of the north and the king of the south and all this other stuff, and it's hard to understand. But that's the details of the wars. When he's done warring and he finally conquers all four kingdoms and he controls the entire earth, I think that's described to us in Revelation chapter 13. The final result is in Revelation chapter 13. The first four verses say this, "And I saw a beast rising out of the sea with 10 horns and 7 heads. With 10 diadems on its horns and a blasphemous names on its heads, and the beast that I saw was like a leopard, its feet were like a bear's, and its mouth was like a lion." So we have this feet like a bear, mouth like a lion, its body looks like a leopard, and it has 10 horns and 7 heads. And to it the dragon gave his power, his throne, and his great authority. Verse 3 there says, "And one of the heads seemed to have a mortal wound, but its mortal wound was healed. And the whole earth marveled as they followed the beast." The whole world follows the beast. "And they worshiped the dragon, for he had given his authority to the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, 'Who is like the beast? Who can fight against it?' The answer is no one, because he is a war machine, and he will conquer the entire world. Who can fight against this?" So if you take that picture, you remember our picture here of a lion with eagle's wings, a bear, a leopard with 4 wings and 4 heads, then you have this 10-horned beast. The thing I want you to concentrate on is the thing that Revelation 13 told us, the heads and the horns. If you count up the horns, there's 10 horns. If you count up the heads, well, there's 1 head, 2 head, 3 head, and this one has 4, so 4, 5, 6, 7. So you would have a 7-headed, 10-horned beast that has characteristics of a lion, a bear, and a leopard. And that's exactly what Revelation 13 tells us. We have the characteristics of a bear feet that looks like a leopard with 7 heads and 10 horns. It's the accumulation of what happens. So it starts out as 4 different kingdoms, and the Antichrist controls 1/4 of it. He conquers the entire world, and in the end, he controls all of it, and the imagery that we get is like this. So, from that, let's turn back to Daniel 7 and let's start going through a couple of these verses. Let's just go through these first 7 verses here. "So in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel saw a dream and visions of his head as he lay in his bed. Then he wrote down the dream and told the sum of the matter." Just as an aside here, for those of you who are interested in this kind of stuff, notice the king has changed. In Daniel chapter 2, it was Nebuchadnezzar. Now it's Belshazzar. Nebuchadnezzar has been dead for a while. It would be really weird to say a prophecy about a future kingdom and this apply to Nebuchadnezzar, because Nebuchadnezzar is already dead. So that's just another little point where Daniel 2 and Daniel 7 don't really match up. Verse 2, it says, Daniel declared, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. And the four great beasts came up out of the sea, different from one another. So I put a little summary up there. I think the four kingdoms are rising out at the same time, suddenly, on the world scene. I think that's how it happens. The four great winds, I skipped over this little thing right here. I think the way you interpret this, the way you help you to understand this, is use the Bible to help you interpret the Bible. So I think all these visions and all these characteristics and stuff are talked about other places in the Bible. So if you can go to other places in the Bible and see what God means when he says these characteristics, I think it will help you understand what these kingdoms might be like. I think this is all future stuff. I don't think this is something that you can label a country right now. I don't think it's something that you... I don't know when it's going to happen. I don't know if it's 500 years from now, or I don't know if it's 2 years from now. But if you want to be knowledgeable, if we want to study God's Word, because he's given all of it to us, and we're supposed to study this stuff, and it's all profitable, and if that's true, then we should take something from this. And something that we can get from this is, what will it look like? What am I to be on the lookout for? Well, I think all four winds, if you look throughout the Bible, all four winds means that it comes from the four corners of the earth. In other places, the Bible, lots of other places, and a lot of times it talks about the compass, the north, south, east, and west. So this is coming from the entire earth, from all four corners of the earth. That's what the four winds represent. The great sea usually means humanity. So these are going to be human kingdoms that come out of the earth, from the entire earth. The phrase, we're stirring up, in verse, I think that's the end of verse 2, it says, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. That is in Aramaic. I haven't talked about this, but chapter 2 through chapter 7 is all in Aramaic. So this Aramaic phrase, stirring up the great sea, actually means bursting forth suddenly. So here we have four kingdoms bursting forth onto the world scene suddenly. It happens quickly. So I think the description of each of these beasts gives us a feel for what each kingdom might look like. So if you look at verse 4, it says, the first kingdom, what will it look like? The first was like a lion, and it had eagle's wings. So what are some characteristics of a lion and an eagle? Well, in 2 Samuel, it ties them both together. 2 Samuel 1:23, it says, Saul and Jonathan, beloved and lovely, in life and in death they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles, and they were stronger than lions. A description of this first kingdom is they're strong and they're fast. But then it goes on in the second part of the verse, in verse 4, and it says, then as I looked, its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and the mind of a man was given to it. So this was a kingdom at one time that was strong and fast. But by the time we get to it here, its wings have been clipped. It's not so fast anymore. And when it says it was lifted up to the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and the mind of a man was given to it, that is a downgrade. Lions are strong, lion-hearted. In the Bible it says when you're lion-hearted, it's like you're a human heart, but you're stronger, you're bolder. This is a nation that has had its wings clipped, and it used to be strong, but it's not so strong anymore. That's what you're looking for. Its boldness has been removed. Its swiftness has been taken away. Verse 5. And behold, another beast, a second one, like a bear. It was raised up on one side and had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth, and it was told, arise and devour much flesh. Obviously, this is a warring country. It devours much flesh. It's described as a bear. A bear is one of the most terrifying animals on our planet, and it kills lots of people every year and lots of things every year. And so animals are always pictured in Scripture as a female bear that's been deprived of its cubs. So this is not only a bear, which is frightening in itself, but this is one that's on guard. It's showing some protection. In Hosea 13:7 and 8 says, so I am to them like a lion, like a leopard I will lurk beside the way. So I will fall upon them like a bear robbed of her cubs. I will tear open their breasts, and there I will devour them like a lion, and as a wild beast I will rip them open. So my guess is maybe this kingdom acts out of a perceived threat, like someone trying to threaten its cubs. It's a strong nation, obviously, because it's a bear, but it feels like it's threatened, and it acts maybe in a defensive way. I don't know. These are future things. Verse 6. After this I looked, and behold, another, like a leopard, with four wings of a bird on its back, and the beast had four heads, and dominion was given to it. So leopards, So leopards are not big and strong like a lion. They attack differently. And I'm not going to turn to it, but in Jeremiah 5:6 and Habakkuk 1:8 and Hosea 13, leopards tear things into pieces. They are swift, which is denoted by having four wings. You know, the lion had two wings of eagles. This one's got four wings, so it must be really fast. And they lie in wait for the prey. So this kingdom is probably a very fast-moving nation. It probably has four leaders or four rulers, or it may be a coalition of four different nations, and has the characteristic of lying in wait or being patient before they attack somebody. That's what we would be on the lookout for. And then you get to verse 7, the different beast. Verse 7. After this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, terrifying and dreadful and exceedingly strong. It had great iron teeth. It devoured and broke in pieces and stamped what was left with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. We don't have an animal description here, so it's different, and we don't know how to describe it. And Daniel is just taken aback, and he doesn't know what to think about this, but it scares him to death. It's terrifying. He's seen these other beasts, and they're bad, but this one's terrifying. It's exceedingly strong, and it's different. That it's different from the beast before it. So it says in verse 7 there, see if I can find it. It says, it had great horns, it devoured and broke in pieces and stamped what was left with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it. In Aramaic, this before always means spatially. So before can mean two things. It can mean chronologically, like I ate pizza and then I ate some pizza before I ate some more pizza, so that would happen chronologically, or it could be in a spatial sense. So you guys are sitting before me. That's what it means here. It always means spatially. It's not chronologically, and it kind of knocks out another point of it being Daniel chapter 2. These other kingdoms are before the fourth beast. They're all together at the same time. It says it devoured and broke in pieces and stamped what was left with his feet. What that means is that what was left represents everything that the first beast don't control. So in other words, the world is divided into four kingdoms, and this is what the beginning of the end looks like. I do think it comes on suddenly. I think it happens fast. But that's what it looks like. So obviously, if we're doing a study on Daniel, and we're doing an in-depth study on Daniel, we can go more into this. But like I said before, what in the world does that have to do with the gospel? Because that's what I entitled this whole thing, is the Daniel and the gospel. Well, how does all this tie together? How does salvation come into any of this stuff? And so that's what I want to move to. So if we were doing an in-depth study of Daniel, it probably would have taken maybe 2 or 3 weeks to cover a lot of that stuff. But I just wanted to give you a glimpse of what's going on there and maybe give you some pointers where to go with that. And so I would like to move on now to Daniel 7, verse 9. And so Daniel sees out of one side of his, he's looking over here and he sees these beasts coming out of the water and he sees all these visions and all the things going on. Then as he's doing that, he sees another thing catching his eye over here. And so in verse 7 it says, as I looked, thrones were placed. And the Ancient of Days took his seat. Who is the Ancient of Days? Yahweh, God the Father. So he sees thrones set up. So the beasts are still over here going on, and in front of him he sees thrones set up. He sees God the Father taking his seat. And so Daniel obviously takes his eyes off whatever's going on over here, and it's all focused here. He's like, the Ancient of Days, that's God the Father sitting in that seat. His clothing is white as snow. The hair of his head is like pure wool. His throne was fiery flames. Its wheels were burning fire. You know, I didn't like reading a lot when I was little, But a couple books would catch my eye when I had to read them for like, and so I did the same book report probably for, you know, 6th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade, 9th grade. So I really liked medieval times. I liked castles. I liked King Arthur was my favorite. I love reading King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table and, you know, and Sir Lancelot and Excalibur and all that stuff. I loved it when I was a little kid. That's what I was, I just thought about that, you know, that was really cool to me. And so if you were a kid like that, you would think of thrones and kingdoms and, you know, I always thought I could be a knight or something like that, but I can't see, so probably would get killed pretty quick. So I probably fit more of the, just thinking about it, I would probably fit more of the Daniel one where he's, you know, the fat bald guy that's the wise man, but maybe I would be a wise man. But anyway, I loved medieval times and knights and kingdoms and castles and stuff. And if you think, what would your throne look like? And so if you had a throne, what would your throne look like? You know, would it be like a little gold leaf on the side with some crushed velvet and, you know, red and you sit in it? Or would it be, would your throne be all of gold? Or would it be skulls or spikes? Or what would it look like if you had a throne to sit on? Or our God's throne, listen to what he sits on. His throne was fiery flames. He's actually sitting on fire. His throne is flames. And he's all white and crisp and clean. He's sitting on flames. This is a judgment scene. His throne is actual fire. That's probably the coolest throne I've ever read. His throne was fiery flames and its wheels were burning fire. And a stream of fire came out from this throne. So he's sitting on fire. The wheels are fire. And he has a river of fire flowing out from him. 1,000 thousands served him. He has 1,000 thousands serving him, doing whatever he wants at any second. Gabriel, do this, do this. And then in addition to that, he has tens, and 10,000 times 10,000s are just standing there, waiting to do whatever these thousands of thousands don't do, or just in awe like Daniel. And it says, the court sat in judgment and the books were opened. This is a judgment scene. So we got one scene going on over here. We have a different judgment scene going on over here. And then verse 11, it says, I looked then because the sound of the great words that the horn was speaking. So Daniel had taken his eyes off the beast for a little bit, and he is in awe of what's going on in front of him. And all of a sudden, he's got this little annoying voice on the side of his head. It's the little horn. It's the Antichrist. I looked then because the sound of the great words that the horn was speaking. And as I looked, the beast was killed and its body destroyed. That's all it says. God just tired of that. You ever had something annoying pecking in your ear? God just goes, okay. The beast was killed, the body destroyed, and given over to be burned with fire. Gone, just like that. This thing that's terrorizing saints of the world, instantly gone. As for the rest of the beast, their dominion was taken away, but their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. We got this vision, and we got this vision, and then we get another vision. Verse 13, I saw in the night visions, behold, with the clouds of heaven, there came one like a son of man. So we see this courtroom scene, and all of a sudden you see a guy riding clouds. He looks like a man, and he's coming to the Ancient of Days. Behold, with the clouds of heaven, there came one like a son of man, and he came to the Ancient of Days. Jesus Christ rides the clouds and meets face to face with God the Father. God the Father presents and was presented before him, verse 14, and to him was given dominion, glory, and a kingdom. God the Father presents as an inheritance to Jesus Christ glory, dominion, and a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom one that shall not be destroyed. And so why did we talk about the beasts so much? I believe that the dominion of the beasts and the suffering they bring serves a purpose for God's plan. There has always been beasts on earth. That's the point. In chapter 2, there was beasts. There was kingdom after kingdom after kingdom. It doesn't matter how great that kingdom was, it wasn't a godly kingdom. There's never been a godly kingdom on earth. If there has been, we'd be living in it. It'd be established. It'd be set up. But even Nebuchadnezzar, who was made of gold, which is the most beautiful kingdom that he showed in that picture, was just blown away like chaff in the wind at the threshing floor. It just goes away. Doesn't matter what kingdom you live in right now. It doesn't matter who your king is. It's all going to go away. That's the point. God will permanently judge the beast kingdoms one day. God is presented here in a judgment scene. And God is seated in judgment with a river of fire to judge the beast that destroyed his creation. Because it's not just about us. I know we think it's all about us, and I think it's all about me most of the time. But there's other things going on here. God made a creation which groans to this day to be restored. And we destroyed that. And he wants to restore that creation. The Son of Man approaches God the Father, and Jesus is given dominion, glory, and a kingdom. And all of this comes through judgment. The way Jesus gets all of these things is through judgment. Certain aspects of the gospel can only come through judgment. We don't like to hear that, but that's the way it is. Salvation will come through judgment. A new kingdom will bring salvation to the earth because the earth has to be recreated because we've destroyed it. Sin has taken over. How do you end, if you were going to end all of this, how would you end the story that God's writing? How would you end sin and evil? How can you do that? Well, you can't allow evil and sin to remain. So all of these kingdoms have got to go away. By judging the beast kingdoms, God can establish his kingdom. That's the only way it can happen. The judgment removes every other kingdom so that only God's kingdom remains. So from our perspective, we don't think that way. When we want to get saved, we're thinking, I want to be saved so I don't have to go to hell because I don't want to be judged. But that's not what Daniel is saying here. Daniel is actually saying the opposite of that. You must be judged. Daniel explains to us that the Son of Man will bring salvation through judgment. It has to happen. Sin and evil have to be judged because he's a righteous God. It must happen. Judgment brings an end to sin and evil. If evil is never punished, good never triumphs. It's in our heart that way. That's why we like stories when the superhero wins the day. Because evil has to be punished. If evil is never punished, good never triumphs. If evil is never removed, salvation can never come. The only way this can be fulfilled in the end is all these kingdoms go away. Because sin and evil go with it. But there's another aspect of it. Mercy. Even though the beast kingdoms are judged, God the Father gives God the Son of Man, a people. A people come out of these kingdoms. Out of those same nations that are judged are a people that are shown mercy, and they're given to the Son of Man. Without judgment, there is no salvation. If judgment removes everyone, then salvation can only be enjoyed by God, right? If God removes everybody because of sin, then there's nothing left. Do you remember why God started all this? Remember, we've taught on this several times. Remember why God created the world in the beginning? It was just the Trinity, God the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. It was just those three. Their love overflows, and he creates the world because he wants a people to be with him. In John 17, verse 24, I don't have it. If I look really quick, that's that prayer that Jesus is praying to God the Father while he's on earth. It's one of the only times we get to see a glimpse of how Jesus prays. I should have put this up there. John 17, verse 24 reads this. Father, I desire that they also, whom you have given me, may be with me where I am, to see my glory that you have given me because I loved you before the foundation of the world. God's desire is that he has a people to share in his glory with him. God's desire is to be with us, to have a people. And if he destroys everyone, there is no people. So he has to show mercy. And the only way to do that is to destroy everything that's evil and show mercy to those who truly desire him. God is looking for people who truly love him, truly desire him, and truly want to be with him. If you don't want to be with him, he turns you over to the world. You want to be with the world? You go with the world. But if you truly desire me, if you truly seek after me, I will show you mercy, and you can be part of my kingdom in the end. We're not done with this. We're going to talk about Daniel chapter 7 the rest of the time. And so we're going to show you how Jesus uses that, and then how the disciples use this verse in this chapter. So we've got lots of lessons left, probably 7 or 8 more sermons on this. Next week, I think Reuben is preaching, right? Okay. So take a break from it for a week, and then we'll come right back to it, and we'll start this back up, and we'll start this judgment scene again, and we'll go over some more stuff. So let's pray. Father, thank you for your word. Thank you for how awesome it is. And we don't know all the details, Lord. Just like Daniel didn't know all the details in Daniel chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar didn't know all the details. He knew a few things. He could understand a few things, but he didn't know every single little detail. But the details really weren't that important. Otherwise, you would have told us more about it. Same thing with Daniel 7. You show us enough that we can help understand, so we can maybe see how the world will be, Lord, so we can recognize things and when the end happens, so we can refer to your word, and we can see it play out, and we can know that it's true, and we can tell others about it. How awesome is it, Lord, that you reveal these things to us, and you allow these little simple minds that we have to comprehend it. Just watch over us, Lord, this week as we think about these things, as we mull over these things, and maybe we read this scripture over and over again, or maybe as we read Daniel 11, or as we read Daniel chapter 7 again, and we try to think about how glorious you are and how merciful you are to us. Pray that each person here, Lord, is one of those that asks for mercy and receives mercy, that they want to be part of you, Lord, that they desire to be with you. I pray that each person here or each person listening to this sermon is one who desires you and asks for salvation, to ask for you to be their Lord and Savior. That's the prayer, Lord. Please watch over us and guide us as we go throughout our week, and help us to return next week to study more of your word. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.